Hi, everyone. Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to the Washington Weekly Podcast on the UBS In the Now podcast channel. Joining us for the conversation today, as always, glad to welcome back Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs U.S. here at UBS. With that, Shane, thank you for dropping by the podcast today to spend some time with our listeners and clients. Looking forward to our conversation.
Thanks, Dan. Good to be back with you. I hope you had a great Thanksgiving, as well as all our listeners.
Thank you, Shane. And likewise, at this point, just a few weeks remaining in 2024, it is very busy up on Capitol Hill, a lot to cover. So let's begin with a potential shutdown of the U.S. government. I understand that bipartisan negotiations to avoid a shutdown ahead of the holidays, I believe it's a December 20th deadline, have been in progress. So where do those negotiations stand today?
Yeah, there are a few different kind of pathways ahead, but I think the most likely path that lawmakers are focusing on is to extend government funding, you know, until sometime in March, probably the end of March. You know, there are still efforts to see if they can finish off the legislation for particular items, like, you know, the Department of Defense would be top tier, that they can try and move that along and singular and parse that out. But, you know, I think the reality is that inertia is going to lead them to kind of this continuing resolution for a, we'll say, a few month punt. There are lawmakers who want to try and, you know, do longer. There are lawmakers who want to do a shorter time period. So I think this March time frame will be the consensus. And there's some rationale behind it. You know, you don't want to do it too short because, you know, in the January timeframe, Congress is going to be consumed with kind of the pro forma of setting themselves up with a new Congress, you know, getting people situated onto new committees. You know, there's a lot of kind of legwork that needs to be done to prepare them for the rest of the year. Plus, the Trump administration is going to be similarly busy standing themselves up. So I think that will lead to this government funding till March so that, you know, there's a little time to try and iron out the details of a full funding bill to fund all government operations for the remainder of the fiscal year, which goes through September 30th.
So outside of keeping the government funded, I understand that Congress is balancing other legislative priorities as well, one of them being an extension of the Farm Bill. There has been some debate over a one-year extension or perhaps an updated bill with a longer duration. Where does that stand, Shane?
Yeah, typically farm bills are done for a five-year time frame, so that way you bring some certainty for the coming years. And also that allows Congress to, you know, midway through that five-year period, start work on the next farm bill because, you know, a bill as large and complex as the farm bill doesn't, you know, come together in, you know, 6 months or so. It's a process that takes several years. So, you know, I think what's happening right now is that, you know, last year Congress passed a one-year extension of the Farm Bill in 2023. And so they're now faced with, do they do that again? And that is looking likely. But you're getting pushback, especially from Republican governors from, you know, kind of farm state areas like Oklahoma that are saying, whoa, 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 you know, we can't do another one-year extension. We had that last year, and, you know, that wasn't great, but we can survive. We were able to, you know, weather it. Doing it 2 years in a row is not going to be helpful to the not only the ag communities, but the Farm Bill also handles food stamps. So the community that needs, you know, food stamps is dependent on a Farm Bill reauthorization. So while there is this pushback to do a longer bill, I think it's a little bit of an uphill climb. You know, there has been a lot of work done in both the House and Senate on a Farm Bill, but I don't think they've come close enough to the point that they can get the full five-year reauthorization done. So I think the most likely scenario is that there'll be a one-year extension of the Farm Bill attached to maybe the government funding bill next week. And so that's what we're keeping an eye on at this moment.
Now, there has also been a lot of push for the 2025 National Defense Authorization Act. What kind of programs or priorities and investments are being proposed within?
Yeah, so this is a kind of a pride thing for Congress. This National Defense Authorization has been passed for some 60 years in a row in a bipartisan manner. So, you know, I think lawmakers of both sides take this as a real prideful thing that they need to get this done, not only for, you know, the security and defense of our nation, but their own kind of looking internally and saying, you know, are we still functioning as a body? So, you know, the House, I think, passed their bill in June. The Senate committee passed theirs, I think, in June as well, but that was just the committee, not the full Senate. So that has left them a little bit behind in their work, and they're working feverishly to try and get this done. And, you know, the House is hoping to vote on a compromise bill next week, and the Senate maybe the week after. So this is a little fluid. I think I'm optimistic that we'll see a bill announced within the next few days. But to your point about what's in it, you know, this hits every, you know, facet of national defense, you know, from the Army to the Air Force to the Navy. But it also actually has some programs in the Department of Energy that relate to nuclear armaments. I think one of the kind of interesting details that we're seeing right now is the House has a significant raise for junior enlisted service members. It would be like a 19.5% pay increase for junior enlisted service members. That the Senate, you know, has a more modest increase. However, both the House and Senate look to increase pay for other service members by about 4.5%. So I think that's a small discrepancy. The House is also focusing a lot on trying to boost up things like housing coverage, fully funding child care assistance for service members. So, you know, there's a lot of effort to try and, you know, boost that area because, you know, the armed services had a tough time the past few years with recruiting people, and some of that has to do with benefits. So I think this is a big push by both senators and representatives to try and, you know, focus on that so they can try and make sure that our national defense is adequately staffed. So I think this bill in totality will probably be close to or exceed $900 billion for 1 year. So a very large and significant bill. But I do think that it's going to get finished off before the end of the year.
Well, thank you, Shane, for all of the insights into some of these legislative priorities of Congress. If we step away from legislation for a moment, turn to the incoming Trump administration. The transition team has been very busy in recent weeks since we last spoke. All cabinet level positions have been nominated. So if we look at the field of nominees as they stand today, what, Shane, would you say are the prospects for all to be confirmed? And when will these hearings commence up on Capitol Hill?
Yeah, well, we've already seen one person drop out for Attorney General Matt Gaetz. And I think, his successor, Pam Bondi, will probably be confirmed. You're seeing a few others take a lot of heat right now, and they may not last. Right now, Pete Hegseth for Secretary of Defense, he's holding on, you know, by a thread right now, and he may not make it through. After him, I think Tulsi Gabbard for National Director of Intelligence, she's going to get a very hard look, and she's facing some skepticism from senators, as well as Kash Patel for FBI director. After that, you know, I would say most, not all, are probably going to have smoother sailing. I think, you know, RFK Jr. for Health and Human Services will face some tough questions. But, you know, a lot of other ones, I think, are on a smoother path, like Scott Bessent to Treasury and Linda McMahon for Education. You know, Elise Stefanik to be the ambassador to the UN, and the list goes on. So a lot of these will take time, though. To your point, you know, the Trump administration comes in January 20th, and I think we'll see the kind of most bipartisan nominations be taken care of in that late January timeframe. And then in February, there'll be a focus in the Senate on the other nominations that may take a little bit more time because there's going to be some tough questions asked. So altogether, you know, this process does not happen overnight. You know, here you and I have been now talking about it since after the election. And, you know, this won't be wrapped up for another 2 months at the very least. So more to come here. And I think, you know, we'll be paying attention as, you know, as some of these may not make it, some of these nominations may not make it across the finish line.
Well, very helpful context when you think about the timing in this particular conversation will indeed continue into the new year. Though, Shane, thank you again for dropping by today. We did cover a lot of ground, so very productive conversation as always. And I do look forward to picking back up with our conversation again soon.
Great. Looking forward to it, Dan.
Thank you, Shane. Again, today we have been joined by Shane Lieberman, Senior Governmental Affairs Advisor with Governmental Affairs US here at UBS. I do want to point out to our listeners and clients, you can now locate the latest Washington Weekly publication available up on ubs.com/Washington Weekly. From UBS Studios, I'm Dan Cassidy. Thank you for joining us. Thank you for tuning in. Be sure to visit ubs.com/studios to view the entire UBS Studios suite of podcast channels, along with our video offerings, such as UBS Trending. You can also follow us on Instagram for content highlights at UBS Trending. UBS Studios is part of the UBS Chief Investment Office within UBS Global Wealth Management. Visit ubs.com/CIO to view the latest research.
As a firm providing wealth management services to clients, UBS Financial Services, Inc. offers investment advisory services in its capacity as an SEC-registered investment advisor and brokerage services in its capacity as an SEC-registered broker-dealer. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. It is important that you understand the ways in which we conduct business and that you carefully read the agreement and disclosures that we provide to you about the products or services we offer. For more information, please review client relationship summary provided at ubs.com/relationship summary or ask your UBS financial advisor for a copy.